Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Temba, his arms wide. This is The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are Shaka when the walls fell about having a Star Trek podcast. I am one of your hosts, Ben Harrison.
I'm your other host, Adam Pranica.
Adam and Ben on the podcast. Fart jokes on the podcast. Dick jokes on the podcast.
Benjamin Adam, R. Harrison, his lungs clear.
Adam, sitting in his basement. Ben, sitting in his loft.
Adam, not getting electrocuted by his podcast gear.
Adam, not Shaka when the walls fell by his podcast gear.
Yeah, I got Shaka'd in the headphones on the last episode. That wasn't fun.
Oh, man. Star Trek Puncast. Now, Adam, we're here today to talk about an episode that has been perhaps the most anticipated episode since we started the show.
You think?
I mean, it's definitely like the one that comes up most often, I think.
When you think of the 170-something episodes of this program, this is definitely an outlier in terms of how the story functions, what it's about. It is really weird.
It's super weird.
I think this may only be the second or third time I've ever seen this episode.
I'm going to go ahead and throw it right up on my mount. What do we call the mountain of good ones?
God, I don't know. I'm inclined to call mine the Mount Riker.
Mount Nuckmore?
Maybe.
That's just the ones with lots of dicks in them, right?
Yeah, that's a whole separate mountain. That's a mountain they keep behind the curtain at the video store.
You don't mount Riker. Riker mounts you, Adam.
Yes, it's true. That's how it feels gazing upon Mount Riker.
I'm sure that Riker is into bottoming just as much as he's into topping.
Sure.
So omnivorous, that guy.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
But I think it's easily one of the best episodes, and I think it is because it is so unflinchingly weird.
I'm going to disagree with you about this, and I think I'll get into why as we move through the episode. How about that, Ben?
Wow. So some tension is already established.
We're doing a little count pointer count here on The Greatest Generation.
I'm sure that made sense for some people.
For people who like Kentucky Fried Movie, it's season 5, episode 2, Darmok.
The entrepreneur is headed into an uninhabited system. They're going to meet up with this species that has been tricky to meet up with. What are they're called? The Children of Tamar,
right?
And there have been a few attempts at first contact with these guys in the past. None of them have gone well, and I love the way they describe how these things ended. It's the Children of Tama. And
Federation vessels have encountered Tamarian ships 7 times over the past 100 years.
Each meeting went without incident. However, formal relations were not established because communication was not possible.
Why?
The children of Tama were called incomprehensible by Captain Silvestri of the Shikamaru.
I love the idea of a ship making first contact with these people and then just sort of giving up. Like,
yeah, just be like, huh?
They just shrugged their shoulders and they were like, all right, well, let's reverse course and leave these people.
Yeah, it's an episode with a big first. We're unveiling the suede jacket era of Picard in this episode, which is a lot of fun.
It really, like, if Picard, the character, were an action figure, he's been given his action jacket. Like, this is a prop for him in a way that I feel like few other characters have really had. This is a red suede Leatherman jacket with leather shoulders.
I wonder what the motivation was behind this. Because a lot of the time when they do a modification to uniform, it's like to cover that somebody's pregnant. And I don't think that's the case here.
I don't think it is either. And if we had done any research, I think we probably could have figured out the answer to this. I just felt like, you know, Pistu is the oldest cast member on the senior staff. He's probably just going to be more comfortable in some looser-fitting clothing, right?
Hmm.
And he's probably cold all the time.
Yeah. It's a drafty bridge.
Ben, do you have any clothes that make you feel like you're action figure special? Like, if you were an action figure, what would be in your action figure playset? What is your action jacket?
I have a jacket that I really like that I actually left backstage at our Portland show.
Oh, no.
On our tour.
Boy, we really didn't make anything on that show, did we?
No, yeah. That was like a $250 jacket that I left in Oregon. Fortunately, a friend of mine lives locally, and he managed to swing by the venue and scoop it up. So I think it's in the mail right now. But I've been without my action jacket for a long time, and I felt like half the man that I normally am.
I feel like this concept isn't unique to Picard. Like, I definitely feel like I have what I'm calling like my gray action cardigan when I have an important work meeting.
See this tie? $20. See these shoes? $50. See this suit? $200.
Like, I'll throw that on there and it makes my posture better, gets me ready for action. Like, this seems like a thing. This seems like a mindful thing that Picard's doing.
I mean, I'm very rich, I'm very influential, I'm very well liked. I mean, I got lots of friends.
This episode, everything before the opening title is, it almost feels like somebody who normally writes for SNL was asked to write like a really square opening scene for Star Trek The Next Generation and then leave. Like, it's like somebody who's had the show described to them a few times but hasn't actually seen an episode. It's like a McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
And it's like Picard and Troy and Data and Riker sitting around talking about this situation they're flying into. I guess probably Worf is there too. But we come back from the title sequence and it's like a play, you know? It's like two parallel storylines happening. One is Picard on the surface of this planet with the captain of the other ship, and the other is Riker and the rest of the crew up in orbit trying to understand why the aliens have abducted their captain, why they are shooting this like interference beam at the planet's atmosphere that's preventing communications or transporter beams, and like what the fuck is going on. Like, they think it might be like a counting coup type of situation, like the Code of Honor episode, although they're very careful not to mention that episode. But you know, for all they know, like the aliens have stolen the captain so that they're that their captain can ritually fight him or something like that. And it's just it's just a struggle to like get Picard back the entire time.
It feels like the tension runs parallel to Best of Both Worlds. Like, this is now the second time in the span of a season when Picard's been kidnapped and taken away from the crew. And I feel like Riker's sense of urgency throughout is far greater for it. Like, no one mentions that this is the second time the captain's been kidnapped, but it was all I could think about. Was like, not again.
Yeah, and he seems more like he's kind of willing to bend the rules more this time, I feel like. You know? Like, he wants to
pursue a lot of... Are you talking about Riker?
Yeah. He's cultivating lots of options for how they're gonna get around this. But, you know, like, one of the two tracks that he's got going is maybe we have to start shooting.
Yeah. Are we going to attempt to tell this story in a linear fashion? Because it's really hard to do a story capsule when some of it's in a foreign language, right?
I guess so.
This made me think of a situation I was in, let's start with the story, I guess. We'll go from there. The entrepreneur rolls up on this Temerian ship and they start talking and they're very hopeful. The tone at the time is great. Like, Picard's one of the great diplomats. He spoke insect once to that one planet.
Klaxon Ries Blajblan Arnik Karnik.
He's a guy that knows how to do these first contact missions, you know, regardless of how difficult the form of communication may be. And so he puts on his kind voice, gets him up on the FaceTime, and starts doing his introduction.
Would you be prepared to consider the creation of a mutual non-aggression pact between our two peoples, possibly leading to a trade agreement and cultural interchange? Does this sound like a reasonable course of action to you?
But the Temerian's introduction is in English, but in, like, all of the words make sense as words, but they're in an order and a format that is incomprehensible.
Bri and Jiri at Lunga.
And so they go back and forth a couple of times. And finally, the Temerian crew grows so frustrated with their language barrier that they get into an argument on the other side.
Yeah, and I mean, we might want to come back to this, but I feel like, you know, having seen the episode, like, rewatching their frustration, like, I sort of headcanon some motive onto their captain as being like, we are aware that there are other species that have figured out how to have spaceships, how to fly around. Like, we know about a lot of stuff around here, but we've never been able to communicate with any of them. And I want to, like, make sure we actually do this. Like, I want to start talking to somebody because we know that they're out there. There's got to be something we can do about this because their language is so weird that they've never been able to break through that barrier with anybody. And so I sort of see this crew as being people who are, you know, on this ship and you know, under his orders, but really skeptical of what he's trying to accomplish.
Sure.
So their frustration is really different from the frustration of the Enterprise crew, who are all just kind of like, I want to know what they're saying.
You know,
and these
what
guys
was
are like, this is a fucking
me,
waste of time. You can't communicate with aliens.
Like, your headcanon is spot on for me, but I needed that extra element of desperation. Like, why are they desperate? I would have preferred to have had that tension raised because they needed to do this for some reason other than diplomacy, you know?
See, but that to me is like why it's so good, is that he just wants to open a dialogue. It's purely a scientific motive for him, whereas so many of the, he's there to expand his culture's knowledge of the galaxy in the same way that the Enterprise crew is. Those are stakes enough for this show.
Yeah,
and I like that about it.
All right, I'm convinced. but petulant second in command over on the Temerian ship is not into this plan.
No,
but the captain is like, I'm the captain around here. We're gonna do Darmok and Jalata Tanagra. We're gonna do that.
Yeah. So he's like, "Give me your knife, bro." And he takes the knife from Temerian Riker. he beams down, and like the camera pans over, and as he is beaming down, so too is JLP, and they wind up on the surface of this planet. And so our two captains, and I think that we ultimately find out that this guy's name is Dathon, but we have no name for him for most of the episode. So Dathon is there, and he's got these two knives, and Picard is like, not into doing the knife fight there, buddy. I am not Paul Atreides.
I'm not in the mood.
Not in the mood. Mood's a thing for cattle and love play, not fighting.
And I'm not into it. I want to talk to you, not stab you. And so the alien cannot convince Picard to pick up this knife, but that's like the opening gambit. And so it becomes pretty clear pretty quickly that this wasn't meant to be a fight between the two of them, but somehow these knives are going to factor in, and Captain Dathon is going to try to convince Picard to is going to try to communicate with Picard one way or another. And you know, like he is kind of more at peace with how different their styles of communications are than Picard is. Like Picard is super frustrated for most of the first half of this episode.
He's the frustrated tourist in a country where he doesn't speak the language.
Yeah.
And he gets super bogged down with, you know, like most people do with foreign travel, like with wanting to say the thing perfectly and understand the thing perfectly, when really the best you can hope for a lot of times is just a minimum amount of understanding to get a point across.
Yeah. Did you recognize the actor that played Captain Dathon?
I did. Who is it?
He plays the guy that Chekhov beams down to SETI Alpha 6 in Wrath of Khan.
That's right. That's the captain of the Reliant.
Yeah.
Man, so that bug really did a number on him.
Yeah.
What the hell is that?
Yeah, he's got a lot of loaf.
You could do a whole show on what happened to the captain of the Reliant that brought him to this point.
Yeah, it really scrambled his brain, made him real confusing to talk to.
Yeah.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that which longer nurseth the disease.
So they're on this planet, and Picard is trying to make a campfire. Captain Dathon already made one, and it's way better.
What happened to Captain Picard between this episode and the final mission? Like, in the final mission, he was rugged as shit. Like,
he had real top-notch Boy Scout skills, and in this one, he's having a tough time.
Yeah, he's willing to die of exposure without fire out here on this planet. It seemed like... It didn't seem like good character canon for him.
Yeah, and it was also just, I mean, like, it would have been one thing if they showed him trying to make a fire and it not really working, but they show him get some flame and then he lets it go out.
They show him giving up, and that's the part that irked me, is that doesn't seem in keeping with his character.
Yeah.
It seems like he's really rattled by this.
Mm-hmm. And I really, like... I thought that that was like a like the one black mark on what could have otherwise been a great scene, because and especially with the HD remaster, this is such a moody scene.
Mm-hmm.
They really let it be dark, and it's not, you know, it's not like a like day for night bad night scene. It's like it's really dark, and it is evocative of the difficulty they are having, you know, seeing each other, and winds up with a little peace offering from Captain Dathan throwing Picard a burning branch out of his own campfire.
Temba!
Temba? What does that mean?
Fire. Does Temba mean fire?
Temba. His arms wide.
And I think that that's like kind of the first sign that we have that this is like Captain Dathan's idea here is like, let's take as long as we need to take to figure this shit out. And meanwhile, like up on the ship, like Riker is just boiling over. Like he is so fucking flipped out about the fact that the captain is still stuck there.
You're holding our captain. I want him released.
Damaka Tanagra.
Your action could be interpreted as an act of war.
They've been trying some transporter shit, and that's not looking great. So they're gonna send a bunk bed with Worf and another security officer down to the planet's surface, and see if they can't pick the captain up that way. And I thought it was a little whack that they only risk a bunk bed for Captain Picard, you know.
We've talked before about how Riker and Worf are supposed to be best friends, even though mm-hmm. that's a thread that hasn't been pulled for maybe an entire season. They've just sort of let that relationship lay. I mean, Riker even says it, like, it's a gamble to send a shuttle down, but he's willing to do it. And he's going to send his best friend to do it.
Sir, the Temarians are fully capable of stopping a shuttle. I'm aware of that. But disrupting our transporter beam and firing on a shuttle are two entirely different things. I'm betting they're not going to push it that far.
He's going to send his best friend, but one of his worst shuttles.
Yeah. Weird decision, Riker.
Well, the Temarians on the ship managed to bullseye the starboard nacelle, and it's a very precise hit designed to make the shuttle not good enough to do this rescue mission, but not to risk the lives of anybody on board. And so they come back aboard, and I think one thing I really like about this episode is all the speculation that's going on among the crew about like what the Temarians are up to here, because it is pretty mysterious. Like they don't have any way of like seeing what the goal is. And so everybody's sort of projecting their own ideas of how the world works onto it. And Worf is convinced that this is some kind of Klingon bar mitzvah situation.
I have confidence in his ability as a warrior. He will be victorious.
Where there's going to be some ritual knife fighting going on. And, like, Troy is really not a fan of this theory.
You're still assuming this is some kind of challenge ritual. We can't be certain of that.
She really hates that Worf is advancing this as the idea of what's happening.
You could really make the case that no one likes Worf right now. And and they haven't for a long time.
Well, I think that this has got to be kind of the last straw, right? Like, how do you keep letting the captain get just beamed off the ship, dude?
No one behaves in a way that makes the viewer feel like there is a close relationship there between Worf and anyone else on the crew.
Yeah.
Like, Guinan is the closest person to him at this point, but we're just supposed to take it as face value that they're friends.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing the evidence, Ben.
Yeah. Well,
they're sort of freezing him out.
Yeah. Worf is going to have to start working out how to prevent unwanted transporter beams and how to open some doors on his own.
It feels like Barclay's more likable than Worf at this point.
They're like, hey, Worf, remember that time you almost caused a Klingon civil war because of your stupid fucking honor? Dick?
So that plan fails. And on the planet, Picard and Dathan wake up the next morning looking pretty well rested.
Mm-hmm.
Dathan's not in his camp, so Picard wanders over there to check out what he's got going on, finds a couple of brooches that Dathan put down on some rocks next to him, and also finds his captain's log.
Yeah. What did you think of those gigas? Was that a religious ritual, or was that some sort of technology to like keep the area around his camp safe from snakes or something?
It could have been either, but they didn't really support either contention with any evidence afterwards. You just see him practice whatever it is he was practicing with them, set them down, yeah, and then go to sleep.
But that's what's so great about it, right? Like, he does all these inscrutable things, and they're like, they have the confidence not to pay that off.
Yeah, you know? I do like that you just see Picard regard it and then go to sleep.
Yeah. So Picard is standing there paging through this guy's diary, and there's like, I really like Picard, and I'm sure he likes me, but I don't know if he likes me, and I'm hoping we go to the dance together, but he hasn't asked me yet, and I'm not sure if I should be nervous about that, because there's only like 2 weeks left.
The captain's log is in the form of one of those folded paper, like, open up, open wide, open up, open wide things.
Yeah.
What are those things called? They have a name.
They do.
Oh, well, someone will write in.
Some dozens of people will write in. he's like looking through that, and Dathan comes running back, and Picard's like, no, I wasn't looking. I just found this. I wasn't actually reading it. And Dathan's like yelling some crazy shit, and then we hear some rumbling noises.
Tarmac, Angelot, at Tanagra.
I was curious. I'm in Doha.
Saka! Timba. His arms were Timba!
No, enough! I'm not gonna fight you! You will just have...
This is like the squint into commercial right now. And the way Picard reacts to the rumbling noises really made me think that they were implying that Picard thought Dathan was ripping ass.
He makes some stink face?
Yeah, exactly. He's like, good lord, this alien is farting now.
I am acute as a ball. You will assist us. I am acute as a ball. You are bored.
It seems like we might have a rock monster situation in progress.
Mm. Yeah.
And, I mean, this has got to remind him of the situation in the final mission, where he got crushed by all those rocks and almost died.
Yeah. Probably also like a little bit Galaxy Quest. Like, it feels a little bit like Tim Allen fighting that rock monster.
Yeah.
So a lot of valences with regard to rock monsters, right, Adam?
So many valences.
The captain, not our captain, I'm talking about Dathan here, is trying to talk Picard through a little bit of tactics. And and the tactics he would like to pursue have to do with fists open, fists closed.
A strategy with fist open? With fist open.
His army with fists closed.
With fists closed.
He doesn't want this to be a Shaka when the walls fell type situation. He wants it to be more of a Darmok and Jalata Tanagra type of situation.
Right.
He keeps saying this to Picard as though Picard knows what any of that stuff means. And Picard is like, listen, like, you keep saying these things. Like, I know the phrases now. Like, I know all the fucking phrases. I know Temba his arms wide. I know Darmok and Jalata on the ocean. But I don't know what you want me to do with this knife and that invisible rock monster over there is really terrifying me.
For some people, repetition is how you learn a foreign language.
Yeah.
This is not the way that Picard likes to learn. He's more of a flashcards guy.
Yeah, he's not into immersion. He's more like, hey, why don't you guys just put together a Duolingo, send it over to my iPad, and I'll spend 6 months, working on that for 5 or 10 minutes a day.
Sure.
So they're getting ready to fight this thing. And meanwhile, up on the ship, Ashley Judd and Geordi are working really hard on getting the annular confinement beam on the transporter tweaked out so that they can try and punch it through this disbursement field in the atmosphere.
Sometimes when I eat a lot of Chipotle, I have a hard time controlling my annular confinement beam.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Has that been true since they instituted all those food safety policies, or back in the Wild West days of Chipotle when it was just like, hey man, fuck it, try one of these?
As true as it ever was.
Oh man. Well, I thought that this sequence was
I find
great.
That like 3-Imodium really helps control my annular confinement beam.
Yeah, you go with the when you're over there, you know, getting your napkins and hot sauce, you get little Imodium to dash on the burrito as you eat it.
Some Imodie.
Tabasco brand Imodium.
Yeah.
I thought this scene was great. There's really authentic tension in both the fight scene and in the transporter scene, and you're realizing as it unfolds that they're sort of working at cross purposes. Like, Picard is starting to get what this guy is telling him. He's saying, like, fist open means, like,
to lure the enemy with
fist closed means we're gonna do like a pincer
to attack.
Fist back and forth means jerk off.
That's how you communicate, isn't it? By citing example, by metaphor.
It's the first time he's kind of worked out like what all of these little citations the alien has been giving him are meant to evoke. They all have metaphorical meanings. They're all examples that he is citing, and he is hoping that Picard will see the kind of imagery of those examples and follow suit. So they start this fight, and it's just then when the transporter beam is good to go. And that means Picard is momentarily stuck in like mid-transport, while Captain Dathan is getting mollywopped by this terrifying half-invisible creature.
It's weird that the transporter kind of freezes him in place, huh?
Yeah. I mean, there's a bunch of things that this episode really makes you wonder about with regards to the technology on this show. Like, it makes you wonder, like, how is the Universal Translator doing this, where it can translate phrases that are meaningless? And also, like, how does the transporter beam work? Does Picard have to freeze because he'll like half dematerialize if he moves, or does it actually like stop him from moving? Like, how does that work?
How could it be anything besides extremely painful to be in two places at once like that?
I've got a piece of him, Commander, but that's all.
On a molecular level, your body has been ripped in half.
Yeah.
It's got to be awful.
Yeah.
No one says it.
Yeah.
You mentioned the moment in Shimoda Corner with Ashley Judd and Geordi.
157 over standard.
It's as solid as it'll go, Commander.
I want to go back to that a little bit. They have, on occasion on this show, teased a new character with 3 or 4 lines of dialogue that we never see again.
Yeah.
And they do a great job hiding the Judd here. Like, you know she's going to be a character for a few episodes in an arc coming up, but...
Yeah, they buried the Judd lead here.
They don't give her any more than they've given anyone else.
Right.
Which I thought was nice restraint.
It's the equivalent of, like, a helmsman who has appeared several times on screen, gets a few lines in one episode, and then is replaced very unceremoniously by a different helmsman.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and I think that despite the fact that all she's given to do here is kind of like technical jargon to yell at Geordi, like, she brings a real intensity to the performance.
Matrix levels?
Annular convergence, 439.205. Confinement resolution, 0.527.
That isn't going to do it. Increase thermal input coefficient to 150%.
Increasing now.
It seems like higher level than your average person saying technobabble in the background.
Right. She's talking about annular confinement beams, Ben.
Was she like a famous actor at this point? She seems super young, right?
I think she was just starting out at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, she was not a... On her resume, I don't think it said actor first at this point.
She hadn't double jeopardied or anything by this point.
No, no. Looks like this one's a collector. That was from the trailer.
I like the cigar thumbs on Captain Dathan. Did you get a load of those thumbs?
I did. He's some, got real, like, some real he's Romeo got like, and Julieta thumbs.
He's got two Cuban cigars.
Yeah.
They're real Cubans. They're human beings from Cuba.
I said Cubans. What did you think I meant?
The transporter gambit doesn't work, but it winds up that Picard is able to scare this beast away, but not before it does some pretty significant damage to poor Captain Dathan, who's starting to bleed some milk, and he's pretty shredded.
His hit points are almost down all the way, and his health meter's flashing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, he's like, he's blinking red intermittently, so you know that it's not that many more hits before before he's gonna, before you move on to the next level.
Yeah.
Make it so. So they've gotten to this stalemate where they know that the transporter thing is not going to work. They know that the bunk bed strategy is not going to work. And Troy and Data have been working really hard on the language thing. And they've kind of gotten as far as Picard in figuring out what's going on, which seems crazy because a bunch of Federation ships have encountered the Children of Tama before and not gotten as far as Data and Troy have. But basically what the McLaughlin group that they have with Riker is they're explaining that the Tamarians speak in metaphor and everything is about imagery for them. Like their entire emotional and psychological worlds are about citing like mytho-historical images, and that's how they communicate. And
to me, this is the moment where you decide whether it's a good episode or not.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot I like about this scene. I mean, Dr. Crusher and Troy are both big characters in this scene. They're just as important as anybody else in the room, which I feel like doesn't happen often enough for my taste. They're coming up against this tension that I think is so classically Star Trek, which is we have done the science on this one and it's still a challenge. Like, we know the grammar of this language, but none of the vocabulary. And that is super frustrating, but it's also, it shows how smart they are, you know?
For an epiphany to work at this moment in the episode, the viewer needs to have the epiphany at the same time as the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it just means that, you know, we're older now and we're more sophisticated viewers, but like, of course it was a metaphor. It was a metaphor the whole time, and you knew it from the first scene of the show. So like, for the payoff to happen 3/4 of the way through and to have, you know, the light bulbs go off in the way that they do, it felt a little unsatisfying to me. Like, I'm not saying that the episode is bad because of it, but they shoot it and play it as like a total gravity drop of knowledge. I just felt like we were there before this as a viewer. Like, yeah, it was a metaphor, guys. Clearly.
I think that what they're saying is a little bit more nuanced than just it's a metaphor. I think what they're saying is we have worked out like what like a couple of these metaphors mean, but there's no way for us to on the fly figure out what all of them are and what they're supposed to mean to us.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting problem to me. I don't know.
They're halfway there. Like, they get... It's sort of like they've solved one of the variables in the calculus problem, but they still have a few more to solve for.
Yeah. I also wonder if it sort of suffers from the Matrix problem a little bit for you, where, you know, like, it was this groundbreaking movie that got parodied and also imitated and changed so many things about how movies are made that when you watch the sequels, they just feel like cheap and stupid. And when you go back and watch the original, it's like, I can't believe that this was a revolutionary new kind of filmmaking when it happened.
Yeah, the retrospect can't help but harm the initial feeling.
Yeah, you know what's in the box.
Yeah.
To mix a metaphor.
Yeah, and again, like by saying that, I'm not saying it's a bad episode or that I didn't like it, but it was interesting how that appeared to be the peak. The climax of the episode seems to come 20 minutes before the end here.
Yeah. Well, and that's so the rest of the episode is like about half of the rest of the episode is literally just like Picard and Captain Dathan hanging out by the campfire as Dathan sort of bleeds out from his loaf, and they kind of trade stories. Like Picard tells the Epic of Gilgamesh to Dathan. Dathan tells the Darmok and Jalad story to Picard, and like what Darmok and Jalad has meant to him the whole time is like two people coming from disparate places, meeting up on an island, kicking some ass and leaving as friends. And that's the whole thing he's been trying to do here is getting him and Picard to kick some ass together so that they can at least have like one thing as a basis of common experience. And hopefully that will kickstart communication between their peoples. So Captain Dathan like finally has won Picard over, and Picard kind of gets him now. And he shuffles loose this mortal coil just as the rock monster comes back, and just as the Enterprise crew works out a way to phaser the shit out of the Temerians.
The particle beam emitters are inoperative, sir.
To knock their scatter beam out of commission.
Scattering field is down, sir.
O'Brien, energize.
They beam Picard up just in the nick of time. He runs up to the bridge and gets on the FaceTime with the Temerian Riker and goes, "Darmok and Jalad on the ocean!" And everybody on the Temerian ship is really excited, and then he explains that Dathan bought the farm at El Adrell, and they have to touch their knives and touch their foreheads.
Shaka, when the walls fell.
Yeah.
Pretty sad.
Yeah. This is the second time where Picard has looked out the window of his ready room somberly to end an episode.
Yeah.
That's his thinking window.
Yeah. He's got a few more places to bum out on the ship than almost anybody else.
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah, kind of a melancholy ending. Like they achieved their goal, but at what cost? and Picard really admires this other captain for putting his scientific and diplomatic goals ahead of his own life.
Temarian was willing to risk all of us just for the hope of communication, connection.
Do you think the Temerians would have been just as satisfied had Picard been the one to die down there? I have a feeling the conclusion of this episode might be a little different. I have a feeling there would be a smoking hulk of a Temerian ship, honestly.
Maybe. Definitely the Enterprise crew would not have been able to establish any kind of communications with them. So,
do you think the Enterprise destroys the Temerian ship if Picard dies? Instead of Daynar.
Like Rwenge?
What does it mean?
It means omerta. It means Rwenge.
Like, we're going to get you back? That was our captain?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways I feel like the Temerians are more benevolent than the Federation at this moment. Like, they honor the sacrifice of the captain in a way that, man, Riker is so unhinged through the whole episode that I don't know that he would have been able to resist that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, On the one hand, yes, they are, but it's also a crazy thing to abduct somebody with the goal of establishing diplomatic relations. So
it's different when you're the abductor versus the abductee. I get that.
when Captain Dathan finally dies, it's like he shuffles loose this mortal coil, and just then you hear the rock monster start screaming again. And I was like, was that one of those farts that happens right when you die? You know, people like pass a little gas when they go out.
I think they pass more than that when they go out, Ben.
Things loosen up a little bit down there.
Your annular confinement beam turns off completely.
You know, I don't really care which dress we get. It doesn't matter to me. I just need to get off this white carpet. No, okay.
Nothing Ashley Judd can do to help you there.
Yeah. You can't reroute power through the auxiliary coupling. It sounds like you like this episode, Ben.
I do. I like this episode a lot. Might be my fave.
Really?
Yeah.
The this is your Washington on your monument?
Might be my Washington.
This isn't going to make my monument, Ben. I still really enjoyed it, but... yeah, for all the reasons I stated, this I liked the episode and I thought it was good, but I did not think it was capital G great.
Well, that's just like your opinion, man.
Do you think it would have made the episode better or worse if we get a scene on the Temerian ship that is the mirror image of the Federation ship, like where we as the viewer hear them talk in a way that we understand, and Riker and Picard sound alien, and like we get to experience their frustration also? Or are we better off having them cloaked in the mystery?
So like one of them is reading a passage from the Book of Revelations and it pushes in on his mouth until he says Armageddon, which is the only word that is common to Temerian and English.
Yeah, something like that is what I'm proposing.
We should just get it over with and start a Hunt for Red October podcast.
Indeed. Ben, I'm seeing some flashing lights on my keyboard. You want to go check out what those are?
Let's check them out.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we have a couple of personal priority one messages here. The first one coming in on subspace is from the Jester Fergusons, and it is to Lieutenant HBC and Crewman Landers. Message reads like this. Oh boy, your cat Precious is turning out to be real weird, and we like that. The boy would love to see this weird cat and pee on your couch again. I can't say thank you enough for introducing me to this podcast. Merry Christmas, engage! Love and cuddles, Trisha, Michael, and Hamish, the boy.
So wait a second. Is the cat peeing on the couch, or is the boy?
The way this reads, I can't help but think the boy might be peeing on the couch.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds like a real problem.
Yeah, I mean, cat pee is upsetting enough, but at least it's blessedly small amount of volume.
Oh man, but it reeks though, Ben. Cleaned up a fair amount of cat pee in my life, and I might prefer boy pee, though... I think to even have a preference would be awful. And so I will withhold any preference.
Yeah, you gotta withhold preference, Adam. We have another one here, Adam. You wanna read it?
Sure. This message was sent to us specifically for the Darmok episode. It is from JP, and it is for B2H2. The message goes like this. To Khan, its lights bright. Geordi and Data in London. Their fist closed. Riker and Worf in the holodeck. Their palms open. Shimoda, his chip stacked. Crusher at Starfleet. Wesley at Academy. Worf at DS9. Q at rest stop. His eyes closed. Rene at Vineyard, his arms open. Picard at Nexus, his smile wide. Riker and Worf in the holodeck, their swords drawn. Wow. I think JP summarized the entire run of Star Trek: The Next Generation in Darmok language.
Yeah, that was like every season accounted for.
Yeah,
this was not a Shaka when the walls fell situation at all.
No, not one bit.
This was a big success. What's Temerian for that?
Ben, enjoying a sheet cake from his coworkers.
Ben, dreaming about a sheet cake that looks just like Ben. Well, that was a fun one. Thank you for everybody that sent in Priority One messages.
This brings up an interesting thing in that you can request Priority One messages for specific episodes. If you do the math on when our episode schedule is, you can pick out a show that works right with your specific message.
Yeah, nice one. Well, if you would like to do that or just throw one on in the mix, regardless of what episode it's going to run against, go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal and $200 for a commercial message. Thanks, guys.
Darmok, Angelad, and Tanagra.
Microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. Now, if you're like me, you were born in the 80s, and THC was vilified by teachers and police officers and members of the clergy and politicians, and it really got ratcheted up to a fever pitch. So I think it is fair to have a little bit of trepidation around this kind of thing. But I think for a lot of people, a microdose of a cannabis product is actually a great thing. And if you are interested in seeing why it is so ridiculous that the world went so reefer mad for so long, I encourage you to give Microdose Gummies a try. So get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Promo code SCARVS. It's available nationwide. That's microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS for 30% off and free shipping. Microdose.com, promo code SCARVS. Every morning when I hop out of bed, I get a couple of capsules of my Ritual multivitamin and a capsule of my Ritual Symbiotic Plus probiotic. I pop them in my mouth, wash them down with a bunch of water, and I know I've taken vitamins and supplements that are going to get my body off to a good start, and these are rigorously tested and validated by third parties for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. And they use scientific tools to select lower carbon packaging, prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients, and set ambitious climate goals. The Essential for Men is the quality multivitamin that I take from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scarves. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off.
This is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Darmok, Angela, and Tanagra.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Ooh, is not the smartest one. Smartest one. Let the boy take over control. Shimoda! Ooh, you make the warp drive hum. Warp drive hum. You gave up the ship to a child. Shimoda! Drunk Shimoda! Take important stuff, stack it up. Doesn't give a fuck, everybody's drunk. And Tasha Yar's getting robot humped. Ben, no! Drunk Shimoda! Drunk Shimoda!
I sure did, Adam. My Shimoda in this episode is Picard. So the first time they try and beam Picard up, he's like, no, you know, because the beast is attacking the other captain and he wants to be there for his boy. Like, he feels like he's just started to kind of understand this guy, and then his crew, you know, doing everything that they should be doing, moves like traps him right at the most important moment of the fight. And the second time he beams up, they are saving his bacon because the rock monster is back, and Picard is surely doomed if he has to face this thing with a small dagger by himself. But he is in such a hurry when he gets up to the transporter pad that he just runs out of the room, and there's like a little look that he gives Chief O'Brien, which is a little bit of thank you, but it's also a little bit of like, you really fucking blew it last time, asshole. He just wordlessly runs out of the room without saying anything. But in that one look, he spoke volumes.
What's unfortunate is O'Brien's going to go home after work, and he's not going to have anyone to confide in. You think Keiko gives a shit about his work problems? He's going to go home to some like sea urchin ceviche dinner when all he wants is potatoes. Poor O'Brien. Yeah.
Well, that was my Shimoda. How about you? You got one?
I keep going back and forth. Like, on the one hand, the decision that makes the least amount of sense to me is Riker sending Worf based on his gamble. Like, in the shuttle down to the planet. He's like, if I know those Temerians, and I don't, I'm doubting they're going to want to shoot down this shuttle on its way to rescue our two captains. So this is worth it to me. Like that, that is weird. But I also can't get out of my head this whole costume change for Picard. Like, if we are to assume that he was given a costume that would be more flattering for him, more comfortable for him in the long term.
Why am I wearing it now? I'll tell you why I'm wearing it now. Because the low talker asked me to, that's why.
It's really fucking blousy, man. Like, he takes off his action jacket down there, and he looks like one of those Santas that you put on your lawn that has the fan in it that's, like, inflating him.
You look like you're gonna swing in on a chandelier!
Yeah.
It's really big.
Something happened to the costume department in season 5 that was metastasized into Deep Space Nine, which is, like, let's make the uniforms get dumpier and dumpier.
Yeah.
Like starting now and through Deep Space Nine until they get the uniforms that they wear in First Contact, like the real fancy movie uniforms.
Yeah.
They got some Dumpasaurus uniforms in this shit.
Like, and if you look at Riker, I mean, Frakes is dealing with some health problems on this show, and he has for a couple of seasons. Like, if anyone needs a more comfy uniform, it's Frakes. Why don't they give it to him, too? Why doesn't everyone get jackets?
Jackets all around.
Yeah. So, I don't know. The more I think about it, the more I'm just calling attention to the strange decision it is to put Picard in the action jacket. And also, like, you remember when Picard gets slashed through the abdomen?
Uh-huh.
That's a great moment for maybe some rubber abs there. Mm. Why didn't he choose some rubber abs?
He
could have sold that.
If it had been a female character who had had the midriff of her uniform slashed, I would have thought it was incredibly sexist.
Yeah.
But yeah, for some reason it's okay for Picard.
Yeah, Picard's showing some patch.
Yeah. Got that happy trail. Follow that thing all the way down to Funtown.
Do we have a Funtown episode coming up next time, Ben?
We sure do. Our next episode is Season 5, Episode 3, Ensign Row. Picard suspects a high-level Federation conspiracy when the crew is ordered to locate the terrorist leader of a renegade race. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
I don't think it's any secret that I have very strong feelings for Ensign Row.
You haven't been concealing that from the viewers?
Not at all.
No?
No. There's no conspiracy there, Ben. I'm super crushing on Ensign Row.
Well, would you veto this episode, or are you excited to watch a Row-isode?
I'm excited to watch a Row-isode, Ben.
Cool.
You keep making up words, and I'm just letting them slide for now, Ben.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll come back to haunt me someday.
Indeed. Well, one thing that continues to haunt us is the continued support that our viewers give us by going to MaximumFun.org/donate. Their continued support really means a lot and helps us produce the show. They also gather to places like Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit to have conversations about the show, make jokes of their own, jokes that are far better than ours. In all of those places, only the liveliest, best conversations happen online, Ben. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I every day marvel at what a cool community has grown up around this show. So if you're into community, get involved.
I think cool about people. Quitting Twitter all the time, and the one thing that keeps me there is our viewers. So thanks, guys.
Yeah. The Facebook had a great thread that you called my attention to the other day, which was people debating whether they would date Geordi or Data.
Yeah.
It was sort of a fuck, marry, kill, but just a which of these two would you have a long-term relationship with? And
great question.
The ladies of Greatest Gen had a real interesting discussion about that. It was fun to be a fly on the wall for that one.
Yeah. Their answer may surprise you.
We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music, Adam Ragusea for a lot of the other music here on the show. Let's throw a thanks to the great folks at MaximumFun.org for all of the support they've been giving us. Thanks everybody for listening, and with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, and an episode of The Greatest Generation that just has a lot of attitude.
We observe strict uniform code around here, Ben, on this podcast.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.